Welcome to the General Aviation Podcast from the UK Civil Aviation Authority.
Hello and welcome to another episode of our General Aviation Podcast. My name is Marnie Burrows and I will be your host for this session. In December, we released a podcast covering various aspects of winter flying. And since we're now coming to the end of the winter season, we're going to be talking about returning to flying post-winter and things we need to think about in the spring. On the podcast today, I'm joined by James Shipp and Tom Gravett from our General Aviation Policy Team. If you can please both take a minute to introduce yourself, your role at the CAA, and a bit about your background in aviation.
I am James. I am a policy specialist on the GA policy team here at the CAA. In my spare time, a PPL, I fly PA-28s and do a bit of tailwheel out in the southeast of England.
Hello, I'm Tom, also a policy specialist with the General Aviation Unit, with a focus on airworthiness. I also fly at the weekend. I've got a CPL and an IR, but I do enjoy my aerobatics at the weekends also in the southeast of England.
Perfect. Thanks both for joining us today. So there are a lot of things to consider when we're talking about returning to flying after the winter around currency and aircraft airworthiness. So starting off with currency, what are things that general aviation pilots should be thinking about for their first flight back after some time off?
Well, Tom, I think let's go with the first things first. When does your SEP expire?
That, James, is an excellent question. I don't know off the top of my head,
yeah.
But it's a great point. And my medical as well. I know that I had it fairly recently, but they're valid. You know, class twos are valid for like 5 years. So good question.
I don't know. I don't know either. I'm in that same camp with you. I don't know. I think it's in 2025. Yeah, Lord knows when my medical. I did my medical actually a good few years ago. So I suppose the point I'm trying to make here is that there is a paperwork angle to do before you even look at or get in an airplane, is to look at those documents that have been sat in your bag perhaps for a few months and make sure that they are all good to go, that your dates are still within their validity range and that you're legal to go flying. It's easy to forget.
So we're talking licenses, ratings, medicals, especially, you know, think about the mission that I think you're thinking of doing. If it's an instrument flight, for example, is your instrument rating valid? You know, you've got to start off with your license and your SEP or MEP, whatever it is you're flying. But yeah, just possibly be aware as well of the specific mission you're doing. Am I rated for it?
That's absolutely.
Very good point.
I'm very simple, Tom. I just have an SEP and a PPL. There's not a lot to lose. But I know an experienced man such as yourself might have a whole litany that need to keep on top of. So it's a good point. I put myself probably in the rusty pilot category at the moment. Sure, I usually fly out of a grass airfield. It's been flooded most of winter, and even last year weather was quite pants. Can I say pants on this podcast or rubbish? Rubbish. Inclement the weather. So look, I've not flown a whole lot. So I'm feeling rusty. And I think my first port of call was an instructor. I had to do it anyway, because I'm a renter, not an owner. And like most people, we have insurance and there's a 30-day limit. So I had to get back into currency. You know, that instructor hour was really first port of call, because I knew I'd just wouldn't be on my game as I normally would be. So that was part of my thinking getting back into season, is look, am I at that same level? It's assessing yourself and your own performance.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's the same as like an aircraft AJEC, if you like, but on yourself. You know, you've got the AmSafe acronym to use when you're getting back to flying. Am I fit and well enough to be getting back to flying? Do I feel right on the day? And, you know, do I feel that I've got enough knowledge to carry on flying as well? You know, do I need to refresh anything? Do I need to look through some of those PPL books and remind myself of some of the key things that I need to think about when flying, you know, from a theory side? And then after that, it's looking, you know, at the day as well. You know, is the weather good enough? Always skipping on a bit.
Yeah, no. I think, that, yeah, the weather's challenging. I think we have a sort of perfect storm at the moment where the weather's not quite there, but you've got a lot of pilots sitting on their hands. They're looking for that gap where it just might be good enough, you know. But I was out the other day and yeah, visibility was not great. The sun was low, the clouds were low, you know, it was just about sort of marginal. And I think that would have been challenging if I was solo, especially with the currency. I'm a VFR only pilot. And I think, if I hadn't had an instructor there, that would have been dicey. But I guess the weather puts that sort of artificial pressure on you, especially if you want to get going, you want to get the season going, starting to think about things. Maybe you've got an aircraft that's sat in a hangar that you own and you're like, oh God, you know, that really needs some usage. I need to get some usage out of it for my buck, you know. Maybe there's those pressures there. And I think it's just being aware that you might not be as on it as you would be. And perhaps, you know, if you had been at the top of your game in the summer last year, you'd flown loads, you know, towards autumn, you might have been pushing some of that weather, then taking a break for whatever reason. It's about recognizing that you might not want to jump yourself right back into that situation, and that there's maybe some skill fade that you might want to just ease yourself back in, do some local missions, do some flight plans and profiles that you're familiar with, rather than blast yourself straight to France or something, you know, and take on those challenges again. It's tricky, isn't it, for us as a regulator to kind of comment, because it's a really personal thing and feeling currency. It's not something you can quantify. I think, you know, we have the regulation, you know, we have the what's set out in the SEP currency rules or the MEP currency rules or whatever you're flying. Yeah, there will be some associated currency rules. But those are sort of the bare minimum look at. You really need to, I suppose, part of the game of flying is looking at yourself critically and going, you know, is this a good idea? Do I feel happy about doing this? You know, and I think this time of year, especially, is the time that we need to be thinking about that.
Mm. And as you said, going with an instructor as well is, you know, a perfect way to get back into flying. You've got someone who should, you know, be current. You know, they've had more opportunity to be flying. But it might be worth asking your instructor, rather than just for a normal checkout, it might be good to ask them for some scenario-based training. We've all had the engine failure after takeoff. We're all sort of expecting it. But, you know, what happens if you're in the cruise and you've got, you know, 20 miles or odd to go to your destination and you get a partial power failure? Do you recognise that? Do you know what you do with it? Does it call for an immediate landing, or can you carry on to destination? So it might be quite good to look at those from a failure's point of view, but also stuff like stalling, spinning, if you're also inclined, you know, to see those visual cues again, to feel those cues. And how to deal with that scenario. How is your stall recovery? Can you get the aircraft flying again? So yeah, good to speak to your instructor about not just a checkout for checkout's sake, but can you get something valuable out of that lesson and that checkout?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, 9 times out of 10, you'll be paying for the pleasure, right? So I think it's about not being shy to ask your instructor for what you want. And a lot of us are guilty. I'm sure pilots listening to the podcast, me and myself in some way, guilty of just wanting to get through the checkout. You just want to get signed off in the airplane because you've got a trip you want to do, or you want to start your season. You know what? Yeah, you know, you could probably get away with one quick stall and a quick whiz around the PFL. And it's, oh yeah, it's good enough. Yeah, we would have made that. Why not? Back home, team medals. But I think is that going to help you in the long run? You know, what if something does happen? Right. How many failures are a spectacular engine failure, especially in the cruise? You know, losing total power, I think the statistics are that that's actually the minority. Much more likely to happen, you're going to get gradual bleeding of power or a reduction to a lower level of power. And then you've got decisions to make. And I think too few of us don't practice those decisions, not only on the ground, but also in the air, because it's a mental capacity game. And it comes right back to currency again, because the more current you are, the more mental capacity you have to deal with situations. Whereas definitely when I flew after the winter, and I've been off for what? It's like 6 months, I think, I've been off flying. You get back into it, and you know, your mind has to catch up a little bit. And yeah, you are a little rusty. Yeah, your circuit profile is a little scrappy, and then perhaps you're getting a bit too slow on approach, but you're not focusing on that because you're fixating the runway. You know, and it's all those things, all those bad habits, all those bad things you did during your student days start to creep back in, because you've not been doing it. You're not in that mindset. Your brain needs to get back into the zone. So it's much better to have that process occur. Someone who is current, who's an instructor, there to keep an eye on what you're doing, rather than just going out there and doing it by yourself. And that includes, I think, aircraft owners. Even if you can legally jump back in that aircraft and fly it because you're within your SEP, you know, should you? Or is it worth just investing that time in yourself, getting an instructor to take you around, doing some of that scenario-based training and really getting yourself in the zone for the season. I think at the end of the day, that will help you maximize your own efficiency of flying. You know, because if you're on your game earlier in the season, you can maximize those opportunities further on into the summer. So it's an investment in your own time, I suppose.
Yeah, it's a great point you make about the capacity game. And it's true, you know, we all went through it when we were doing our PPLs, you know, our first licenses. You were behind the aircraft because you didn't know what to expect. You didn't know what the reaction was going to be. And, you know, when you step up to faster aircraft, again, you're usually behind the aircraft. Everything's happening a bit quicker or more complex. So you've got more things to think about. So, yeah, that practice makes perfect kind of thought is hugely important so that you gain or expand that capacity to deal with not just ops normal, but ops aren't normal. Yeah. I've got something weird flashing on the dashboard. What do I do about it? And, you know, if your mental capacity is taken up by just flying the plane, it doesn't give you enough in reserve to go, right, I'm flying the plane. Let me diagnose properly what this is and get the outcome that I need from this. And I think this is, you know, just going back to your point you said about ensuring that you're safe for you. You know, if you do fly an aircraft that's got more than one seat, it's likely you're going to be taking up a passenger or two or three at some point. And it's likely that you're going to be flying over some congested areas at some point during your flight. Definitely what we can say from a regulator's point of view is, you know, we're here to try and reduce the risk to third parties. And, you know, by doing a checkout properly and by practicing stuff that you wouldn't normally practice or wouldn't normally do, you are reducing that risk. And that's what we're all here for, is to reduce the risk of flying.
You both covered some really great points there. And we do have a lot of safety resources that we've already got available on our website on different things, such as safety sense leaflets for care of passengers and loss control, stall and spin awareness. We also have a lot of safety animations, specifically one that is looking at return to flying and pre-flight checklists, which are really, really helpful for anyone looking to get back into flying after some time off. We'll pop everything in the podcast notes below so you can easily access everything. So we talked a lot about currency and things that people need to consider when coming back to flying, but we also need to think about conditions at aerodromes. Obviously, through the winter this year, we've had an exceptionally wet winter. There's been a lot of rain, which causes a lot of standing water, especially on grass surface aerodromes and airfields. So what are the sort of other things that you need to think about when you're kind of going to visit your aerodrome?
Yeah, for sure. It's still wet out there. I'm looking at clouds at this moment. We've had, what, the worst rainfall for 200 years?
Yeah, it was so one of the wettest Februarys ever, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, exactly. So I think there's a lot of grass airfields definitely suffering and struggling at the moment. And if you're going to be operating off them once they open, if yours is open, I think a big part of preserving the airfield surface for other people is about how you're operating the airplane, you know, on that soft surface, you know, let alone the sort of performance factors involved. If you're riding heavily on the surface, if you're using excessive braking, making sharp turns on that surface, it will chew that surface up. So, you know, whether you're on a grass strip or just a bigger grass airfield, I think it's about thinking now about preserving that surface for the summer. Because if you churn it up now, it'll be really rough when the ground dries out. So that's part of your operating equation.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and it starts even before you start, it starts before you get in the aircraft, you know, going to have a little walk out onto the taxi area. And if it is squelchy underfoot, you know, if it's soft and you're getting through that first layer of grass, you should really consider whether operating today is the right thing to do. If you're taxiing along and your nose all digs in and you ding the prop, that's a very expensive mistake for trying to go out perhaps earlier than you should have done. You know, so it does start before, you know, you can make that decision before you even start getting the aircraft. And if it is, you know, if it looks damp, but it does look doable, it's about taking it slow enough that you're not going to skid if you need to make a stop, but also you also need to consider about not stopping where possible just in case you sink in.
Yeah, and we had not too long ago, was it a couple of years ago, we had a real spate of accidents to do with aircraft spats and mud being churned up into the spats, leading to sometimes aircraft even flipping over. I think we had a couple of injuries, a couple of fatalities. If you are operating on the wet, it's about checking those spats for buildup of grit and mud. And even, you know, perhaps if the ground's bad enough and you're still operating, perhaps removing those spats within obviously the guidance, your particular aircraft But yeah, just eliminating that, that's a factor completely.
Yeah. And James, you mentioned safety factors earlier. So you've assessed the ground, you've assessed it's safe to taxi. So you've taxied across and you haven't got stuck. Good job.
Thank goodness.
Thank goodness. You can then start to think about your short field takeoff and your short field landing performance. Or in fact, actually, this should start before you get the aircraft. You know, you should do your calculations based on dry grass, dry tarmac, wet tarmac. There are safety factors associated with those. And you need to make sure that mass and balance wise and performance wise, you are within the envelope of your aircraft. So it's important that you do those numbers, but, you know, again, before you get out to the aircraft and get taxiing. And it's then using those techniques as well, using your short field takeoff and landing techniques as per the POH to ensure that you can get those figures.
Yeah, because you'll travel further, right? You know, wet grass, even wet tarmac, you're going to be your takeoff run longer, your landing run especially longer. So even if you're in and out of some of these tight spots as people operate from, it's being aware that you can skid on wet grass. You know, it's something that happens. It's put many a GA aircraft in the fence. So really being aware, more so than you are perhaps in the height of summer, of those performance factors and what is the surface you're actually operating off, because it has been so bad recently.
Yeah. And it's worth talking to your aerodrome as well. You know, speak to the people that go out and look after your aerodrome. If you've got crews that go out and inspect the runways and inspect the field, speak to them. Say, oh, have you noticed any particularly bad patch around the aerodrome at this time? And again, it just gives you that situational awareness that you can avoid those patches where possible and ensure that ultimately you have a safe flight.
So you mentioned your pre-flight weight and balance considerations. Is there anything else you'd be thinking about before going out to your aircraft? Weather is probably a big part of this.
Yeah, 100%. I think at the moment, it's vital to give yourself a really, really robust weather briefing using as many resources as you can get hold of, because it's the season. It's always sort of spring in the UK. There's a lot of instability about in the atmosphere. Things are changeable. You know, forecasts can change. It's very hard to predict. So I think you really need to be staying on top of your weather, especially if you're VFR. It's important to know what the conditions are, to have a good idea of how they're going to change across the course of your flight. Start thinking about alternatives.
Yeah, absolutely. And definitely includes any kind of like diversion airfields as well. Not only looking at your departure and your destination airfields, but your en routes as well. Again, we mentioned about failures earlier, but weather goes for it as well. You know, the weather might close in at your destination. It's always good to have a plan B, plan C, plan D. It's good to have an out and make sure that you're aware of the gist of what's going on with weather en route as well.
Yeah, absolutely. We have some fantastic tools to do that now. You know, we've got your sort of iPad-based flight bags that are great tools when used properly. But again, it's almost like your own currency. Lots of these devices probably been sat in a flight bag over winter. I know mine's been at the back of my cupboard. So it's about pulling out that beforehand and making sure you've updated the software, you've updated the maps, and everything's working as it should be. Perhaps, you know, you've renewed your contract via wireless cell reception, and make sure that equipment that's going to give you that situational awareness is going to be working as you want it to. And you want to really do that on the ground, not in the air. You don't want to find one of these snags in the air. So it's one of those sort of post-winter things to do, is just get out the tech and make sure it's all working as you want it to.
And if you're old school like me, even maybe a paper chart as well, make sure that's up to date. Things happen over winter. Danger areas get, you know, created, airspace changes, all of these things that can happen just whilst you're not looking. You know, whilst flying isn't in the priority list because the weather's a bit bad and the stuff that you would have usually just kept an eye on, yeah, they can pop up as well. So it's really good to make sure that your chart is up to date and you've notated any additions for airspace or danger areas or anything like that as well. Just make sure that from a planning perspective and getting it done on the ground, you're as prepared as you can be before you set out on that flight, because very difficult to do that in the air.
I think also make sure that you're signed up to Skywise so that if you want to keep an eye on any airspace changes or any NOTAMs, you can find them on there. And it's a really, really helpful tool if you're ever looking for anything that might be coming up in your area. We've talked about currency and we talked about visiting your aerodromes and things to consider around weather. Obviously, one of the most important aspects of flying is checking your aircraft. And through the winter, obviously, there's a lot of changes that can happen. Obviously, the weather is a big aspect. Is your aircraft sat out on grass surface? Is it in a hangar? What are some things that people need to think about when getting their aircraft back out ready to fly?
It's a good question, Marnie. I think this applies to all of us across the board, not just those who own. Also those like me who rent. Some aircraft will have been out all winter, perhaps in the hopes of something optimistic weather-wise that never worked out. You know, and maybe someone hasn't seen them for days. Maybe they've been open to the elements. So it's worth really getting into that detail when you first sort of rock up to the aircraft and making sure that everything is how you'd want it to be before you go flying.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, the use of checklists here is going to be hugely important. You know, a checklist has that external section to do your walk around, and it's your A-check. It's part of your A-check. You do an A-check before every single flight. To me, especially if I haven't flown for a little while, it's just an extended version of that A-check. It's having a very good look around the aircraft, making sure, you know, the hinges are clear, making sure that the control surfaces aren't sticking, they've got no sticking points, the tires are inflated, making sure that you've got enough pressure in there in the ODOs as well. Pitot and static vents are all clear. You know, the simple stuff that you would probably otherwise look over because, you know your aircraft, you know your way around it. But it's really good after a period of time to make sure you have a deeper look. Just give it a really good look over and make sure things are how you want them to be, how you'd like them to be.
Yeah, and you make a great point about the control checks. You know, there's other aircraft out there, gliders especially, but I know there's some types of microlite as well that might be stored, you know, collapsed, folded up, the wings potentially off. So you might be reconnecting some of those control lines after a long stay in storage. So it's about really making sure that you're doing those positive control checks, about making sure you've got full free movement, all those controls, they're working in the correct sense as you'd like to see them. And I think, Tom, it's fair to say that even if an aircraft has been hanging over winter, you really want to be careful with some of this stuff, right?
Oh, absolutely. You know, hangar rash is a thing. You know, people are moving aircraft in and out and, you know, usually aircraft chair hangers, and, you know, accidents do happen. And a lot of our community are very honest and will tell you, but if something's happened and someone didn't realise it, you know, if it was a small scrape that they didn't feel when they were pulling out their own aircraft, sometimes they didn't know either. So it's really good to make sure that you have a look for those kind of things, as can happen out in a field as well. It can happen in a hangar as well. Hangars can also be quite harsh environments. They can get cold. They can be damp. They can have birds nesting, for example. You know, dust can settle on your aircraft. Yeah, so it's really important that you look at those kind of things and make sure that, as I say, the aircraft is how you want to see it. So another thing I was thinking about, James, was actually the as we mentioned earlier about licenses and ratings, is the aircraft paperwork. You know, is the ARC valid or the certificate of validity valid? Are the radio station license, is that still valid? You know, all of these insurance, all the paperwork items that you've got in that big folder that's sat somewhere, probably not looked at for a few months, it's making sure that those kind of things are valid as well. We want to make sure we're legal when we're flying.
Absolutely. And all of that's of course up to not necessarily even the aircraft owner. It's up to you as the pilot in command to ensure that everything is in date and valid and you're legal to fly on the aircraft. So renters, also keep checking those documents, because you never know, things can slip through the net.
Absolutely.
Thank you both so much for your time today. And just to say that all the safety resources that were mentioned in this podcast, plus anything else that may be relevant to the topic, can be found in the notes below. And if you have any comments or questions, either on this podcast or if there's a topic you'd like us to cover in the future, please do get in touch with us at gapodcast@caa.co.uk. Thank you so much for listening.
Thanks for listening. This is the CAA General Aviation Podcast.